Late Night Gamers Podcast, where we make all of your gaming habits seem acceptable.
Late Night Gamers.
Steve Buzzard
sucks so bad, so I'm down. Just quit and never play it ever again.
Carl.
What do you do in your free time? Sit around knitting?
Screw that shit. I'm gonna cut up a dragon's head.
Tim.
It's okay if your guts spill out and you explode into a bloody mess. As long as you don't take your clothes off.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Late Night Gamers Podcast, episode 25. I'm Nick Persanowski, and with me this week and every week is Tim Madden.
Hello, ladles and jelly spoons!
Steve Morgan.
Do you smell what the rock is cooking?
And Charles Caldwell.
Don't touch that!
I really thought there was going to be more to what you were saying, Charles.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be like, don't touch that dial.
He wanted to hit everyone. He wanted to make sure everyone thought he was talking to him.
That.
Or he was talking to them.
I think that's what makes it so unique.
Hit it right on the head right there.
You don't know what I'm talking about. I could be asking you not to touch it many things.
Someone stopped and was like, oh, he knows.
It's like an English teacher that we had in high school. I won't say his name because this is actually a really inappropriate story, but when Jimmy McEwen went up to his desk and he goes, I'm touching things, and he's touching everything on his desk, and he goes, if you touch that, I'll touch you. All of us were like, that's inappropriate.
Yeah, but we were horrible children.
We were.
Like, horribly traumatized. Every teacher that we had.
Yep.
Vicious, vicious children.
Actually, we were the best. And that's all there was to it.
True story.
The
bar was set low.
Well, I mean, we look really good in comparison to the other two grades that we had behind us, so...
The horribly disfigured, like, three-eyed creature mongoids that are from our town.
They're cute mongoloids. They crawl out of the grave.
I hope nobody with three eyes is listening to this podcast right now and doesn't beat me up.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry if you have three eyes.
It's okay.
As long as that third eye can see into the future, then it's fine.
What if it can only see into a different dimension?
What if it can only see into the past?
Off crowd.
Speaking of third eyes and evil dimensions.
Well, actually, we're going to talk about...
Speaking of third eyes and evil dimensions.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Perfect transition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago, we had gotten on a tangent of the ninja rap that was done on... Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, The Secret of the Ooze. And this week, Kraft Macaroni and Cheese released extremely awesome commercial with Vanilla Ice, and it's for Ninja Turtles macaroni, and they do like ninja rap in it. And the thing that got me right off the bat was like, wow, Vanilla Ice is like, he's stocking shelves.
I didn't even think that.
He got a real job.
He just like totally doesn't even care about his image.
No, he's out of work. That's what happens.
He was on Celebrity Rehab or one of those at one point.
Yeah. Didn't he like try? Yeah, he went off the deep end.
I think what's really sad about this commercial is that it's like completely targeted to like the generation of people who are now the older, like us, who
parents.
Are now parents.
Oh yeah,
you know, buying their kids Kraft.
It's magazine. Like, who are you? Why are you talking to this like drugged out shop
weirdo
store clerk?
That's like the best part of the commercial is the kid's like super confused and she's like dancing because she like knows this song and she's like old and we're like,
yeah,
like, That's us.
I like that.
No kid is going to see this commercial and be like, I want Kraft mac and cheese now.
No.
Is that mom lady?
You're
going to
eat those turtles and you're going to like it.
Yeah, it's...
Why do I have to eat turtles?
Yeah, it's definitely a commercial for the parents. That's for sure. I like how at the end of the commercial, he's watching his mom dance to ninja rap, and he just grabs the macaroni and cheese out of her hand and throws it in the cart.
Complete disgust.
It's like, ugh, get out of here.
You disgust me.
So that was just a little note on ninja rap. If anyone paid attention a couple weeks ago, the other thing that Charles was alluding to earlier, evil mongoloids and things.
That's true. When you think of an evil mongoloid, what do you think of? Do you think of the evil within?
I think of Charles with black eye makeup around all over his face.
With really poor posture.
Yeah, that's an also.
So the Evil Within actually got a release date announced this week, and it's coming to I think basically all consoles on August 26th of this year, which is really exciting because I wasn't expecting it honestly until. Probably closer to the end of the year, if it even came this year. So August 26th is a welcome surprise. It looks pretty scary. It's the last game that Shinji Mikami is gonna do, Resident Evil dude. So
the last one.
I think it's the last game he's gonna work on because he's done a whole bunch of other stuff, but he wanted to do like one last horror game, I think. So
dang.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I bet it's gonna be some ridiculous ending.
Yeah. I feel like for someone to say that that's gonna be their last one, mm-hmm. he probably has like a lot of ideas, a lot of built up stuff he wants to include.
I hope so.
A lot of weird rage.
Weird Japanese rage.
Yeah, it's just gonna be completely like insane and so weird because he can just do whatever he wants and he's just like, peace, I'm out! This is what it is. Everyone's like
mic drop.
that's how the game ends. It's just like that blood monster coming out of the floor actually beatboxes and then drops the mic and walks off stage.
You fight the final boss, you like beat him or whatever, and then he just rips you into two pieces and says, Finn. You're like, what?
You play it again just to see if there was a different option. This is the exact same thing. That'd be brutal. Fiend.
Some other announcements this week. The Sony announced that the PlayStation 4 has sold 5.3 million units as of February 8th. And Xbox or Microsoft hasn't come out with numbers that match that, like in terms of date wise. I think they sold like they were in the 3 million range in January at some point, so they're probably up closer to 4 now or something. But I mean both systems are selling extremely well since the I think Michael Pachter or one of those other analysts had talked about both consoles selling 10 million units a piece by the end of 2014. Hmm. So they're well on their way.
Yeah, it seems like they're going to go over that.
Yeah.
I wonder how much of that was during like holiday season.
I don't know. I know.
Seems like it's been a slow burn.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it peaked during the holidays and kind of like dropped off now. But I'm curious, you know, what the numbers are looking like after the holidays.
Yeah, I know. In January, some sources or some articles were saying that the PlayStation 4 outsold Xbox One 2-1.
Wow. I mean, I'm not surprised since it's $100 cheaper, but
yeah.
Still 2-1 is a pretty big margin.
Yeah, that is a big margin. I mean, granted, neither of them, they're both doing extremely well. So it's good. It's good to see. It's good to see that the hopefully the video game market is picking back up, and I don't know. I just hope things continue well.
What's the Wii U number like in relation to all this?
unannounced.
It's in the thousands.
It's yeah, like limited edition. Everybody has their own like individually numbered Wii U.
I'm pretty sure there were games on Xbox One and PlayStation 4 that sold more units than like the Wii U has sold in the entire time it's been out.
I'm curious how these consoles compare to like the last gen, if they've sold faster.
Yeah, I did read about that. I think they have been, at least the Xbox has been selling at a faster rate than the Xbox 360 had been.
So it could just be awareness.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I know there's more gamers now, more people on Earth. You know, it's more likely, you know, more people want to play games, there's more people to play games, so it's logical that there'd be more units sold. I'm just wondering, like, if they've sold faster now, if there's, like, a bigger market for games than there used to be.
Yeah, I know the consoles, I think, have a higher attachment rate, like, in terms of number of games that are purchased per, like, console sold. And they're up at like three or four per console, which is, I mean, that's pretty big for a launch. But
yeah, that's good.
So yeah, good numbers. Speaking of numbers, Tim, you posted something on about World of Warcraft.
Yeah, so I just came across this on Reddit earlier, but. Joystick posted about it also. It looks like they, and I didn't even know this was going to be a thing, but apparently in WoW, we had already known that they were going to be giving out free level 90 boosts to anyone who pre-ordered Warlords of Draenor, but now it looks like you'll be able to buy the level 90 boost for $60 at any point in time, which is pretty huge. That's kind of mixed opinions, but it seems like most people generally think it's a good idea. But I mean, you know, of course you're gonna have your horrible people playing 90s who just don't know how to play them.
What's the maximum number of characters you can have currently in the game? WoW?
I don't know. It's quite a few.
It used to be like 10. I think they increased it to like 12 or something with the new expansion, right? But that's per server, right?
Yeah, per server, I think it's like 10, I think it's still 10, okay. But I mean across all
it's
realms,
like 10
yeah,
it's per.
Like 30.
Yeah, it's like something crazy.
Yeah, it's still a limit. Yeah, like yeah. I know I have a few. It's like 30 or 40 across servers, but yeah, it's like 10 or maybe I think it's 10 on a single realm.
So for a cool 600, you can just
oh, yeah. you know there'll be people doing that. I think it kind of sucks for the people that grinded all their, you know, there's a lot of multi-boxers and people with, like, insane accounts. It's just kind of, like, shits all over those people for all the work they've put into the game. But at the same time, it's like, why did you put that much work into this game?
Yeah.
I mean, I have, like, three or four 90s, and I'm like, yep, definitely wasn't worth $60 a piece. Let's just say that.
Yeah, that's true.
So...
Yeah,
like you're literally grinding the game for like a month straight, and like bloodshot eyes, and not sleeping, like human interaction.
There's a lot of people who also like they would get a separate account, link their two accounts, use the recruit a friend, you know, to in order to get the XP boost, level up another character, and then transfer it over to the other account. So that's like a, you know, they're paying an extra $15 a month just to level a character.
Yeah,
I guess this is a good thing. It just cuts that whole part out of it, but it does away with all the, like, the achievement of finally hitting that level 90, you know?
And you said that they're increasing the level cap too, right?
Yeah, the new expansion level cap is up to 100, so.
It just seems rough. It's like $60. I mean, what is that? It's not even a full day of work.
Yeah. It's just like, I mean, I guess it doesn't matter though in the grand scheme, because a lot of the gameplay now is that like 90 to 100 end of end game. Nobody wants to play 0 to 90. It's just a grind, so, really. It's not like
so you, can really play, is. You can pay $100 to actually play the game.
You know, yeah, I have 5 90s now, and I don't want to play. I don't want to do that content anymore. It's like you do it once, maybe twice, and you're like, all right, yeah. I don't want to ever do this again.
It's pretty.
You don't want to go to the Badlands.
The Barrens.
No, you don't. At this point, I don't even go to zones anymore. I just queue in the Dungeon Finder and grind my way to 90. It's like, I'm not gonna... I'll browse Reddit, and then when my queue pops, I'll go to a dungeon, and that's it. It just turns into, like, this endless, horrible chore. So, I mean, for $60, it's worth it.
If you can justify it, because at the end of the day, it's gonna be a character, well, for, like, us that already have 90s, it's gonna be a character that you just want to have. Like, it's not even going to be one that you, like, you need. You're just like, I really want to have a Warlock as 90. Do you want to spend $60 on it?
Yeah. I think this is I mean, a lot of new people coming into the game already will have that free 60, but I think this will probably be targeted to people who, you know, like, maybe are just joining the game for the first time. Or people who've been gone since, like, the original game, or, you know, something like that.
Yeah, my 360 doesn't seem so appealing now. It's, you know, like, 60, I got 40 levels left.
Yeah, right. But the other thing I read is that it's going to be kind of like the Death Knight starting zone, so when you boost your character to 90, you'll have, like, kind of like a starting zone where you learn all the skills and stuff.
That's pretty cool.
Which is... Yeah, cool.
Because that happened, nice. Like, with the new one where you got a free boost to, like, 80 or something. And I did that, and then, like, I was so confused.
Yeah.
I got, like, 5 levels, and I still didn't even know certain abilities that I had. Because the thing is, in that game, you get, like, 1 every, like, 4 levels. And by the time you're 90, you have, like, 40 abilities. Like, not even joking.
Yeah.
It's too many to know, like, all the intricate, like, uses of them.
It's hard even with Death Knights, because you have, like, it's like you're thrown right into it, and you have runic power, and you have all these weird things. It's like, I don't want any of this shit does. I just slam buttons and watch little things disappear and pop up. Like. But it'd be hard to instantly be a 90 and be like a shaman and be like, what are totems? What are shit? Like, you'd just be out of it.
I think that's also why Death Knights were so broke, though, because they made them so damn simple. They tried, at least.
Yeah.
Like, and so they're just like, yeah, smash this one button and you'll crush this guy. Smash this other button if he's running. So
yeah.
So it's interesting. So I guess that wouldn't be a problem since they're gonna just boost normal characters, but yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting, we'll see. And I know they're scaling all the damage in the game, right, and stuff, but all the abilities are probably gonna stay the same.
Yeah, that's another huge thing that, you know, the scaling, it's going to really change the game. Like, because I think so many people are used to, like, seeing these big, huge numbers. They're going to be like, oh, you know, sticker shock when they see everything. Like, reverse sticker shock when you see all your abilities. Like, pew, make a little thing. But, yeah, it'll be interesting.
Sweet. Steve, you played some Titanfall this week.
I did.
What'd you think?
And by this week, you mean like today?
Today.
So I played, I got to play today for probably like two or 3 hours, and it's pretty cool. It's definitely got like a similar, I don't want to say it's a similar feel to like COD or anything, because that's probably not really true, because it's completely different, but it's got like similar mechanics, let me start back. It's got a similar kind of, like, feel to it in that, like, there's objective base, and this, or you can do, like, you know, team deathmatches stuff. But the Titans and stuff are really cool. Basically, there's no kill streaks or anything. Essentially, what happens is, as you kill things or do objectives, or I'm not really sure if you get them for objectives, but as you do things, you sort of get, like, timer off on your Titan, which has, like, a timer, and you can call it in. And, the Titans and, like, the people battles is actually pretty balanced. Like, there's an advantage to having a Titan, definitely, but but you have to really know like what situations to be in. So it's pretty cool, man. Titan battles, and you have basically two loadouts. You have like your Titan loadout, your normal guy loadout, very similar to like Call of Duty. You have like a weapon with like attachments, and you have some perks that you can like add to your guy and stuff. And your Titan too, so it's pretty cool.
Is there a significant difference right now between the different types of Titans, or is it kind of just all?
And in the beta, they like didn't really release everything, I don't think, because yeah there's a pretty limited like selection, which I'm pretty sure is not the way it is in the game. Right now, all the Titans, I think, there's only like one chassis you can use, so they all pretty much look the same. But you can modify like what your primary gun is and what your like abilities are, and the abilities are they're actually pretty cool. Like the main ones, kind of like you can either have like a shield, which like captures all the bullets another Titan shoots at you, and when you let go, it shoots them back, or like the other ones, like this cloud of like electric smoke. So if someone jumps on your back and starts shooting, you can like get them off. Plus you smoke, so people can see. So it's really cool, man. It's like in the when you're like the pilot mode, they call it, when you're not in the Titan, you can parkour. So you can like run up walls, and you can jump from wall to wall, and you can jump up walls, like you can, and you can double jump and stuff. So it's very, you have a lot of mobility, and you can really like jump up to like, you know, that's like the rooftops and shoot down on people and jump down on Titans and, you know, get on their backs and start shooting them. It's pretty cool. I really like it. I mean, it's definitely like, I need to see more content, and I'm gonna probably let it come out for a while because of how bad I got burned on Call of Duty, but.
Does it seem like it's going to be better than Brink?
Brink? Oh, God.
Yeah, that was the last parkour game that I was thinking about. But
I think the parkour element kind of is necessary for the whole Titan versus little dudes aspect.
Yeah, it makes...
Like it, you know, the extra mobility kind of makes it reasonable.
And also, too, it's just like you really need to be able to... I mean, I think it's also a speed thing, too. Not only, like, a mobility, but it's also just, like, if there's a Titan on the other side of a building, you don't want to have to, like, run up the staircase and then go to a ladder and then climb up it.
Yeah.
Like, you can just jump up the building and jump up to the top, and now you're, like, have advantage, or you can, like, be a part of the fight. It's definitely, like, nice. It's definitely nice in that. The spawns, everything seemed cool. Game seems pretty cool. I mean, I definitely liked it.
Any of the traditional first-person shooter rage?
Oh, of course. I was I lost my first like six games with Chubbs, so he's like disgusting. We lost the first six games in a row that I played, and some guy was completely crushing us, like 180ing me in his Titan and stuff, like jumping in 360 shots. So I don't know if he was like a dev or like he was a like beta hacker. I have no idea. He was disgusting.
I know people were concerned about like the 6v6 games. How is that? How does it feel? Does it feel
okay? So there's another thing that I didn't really tell you about, which was that there's actually like AI component in the game,
mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of like what they call grunts, inspectors, or like bots,
okay,
that run around and you get bonus points for killing them. Like you get bonus time off of, like the next time you can call down your Titan, and that kind of keeps the game seem like more full, basically. The maps seem much more full, and they'll go to objectives, and if you push them back, they'll like, it's almost kind of like a tower defense or like a MOBA, but like not really. Like they don't really like do a lot to the game, but like, you know, if you push them back and stuff, it kind of helps a little bit. And they'll run around and spawn, they like land all over the place. And the other thing too is if you like jump out of your Titan or something, it's basically an AI and it'll control itself. And so so you can have like, I think you can set it to follow you or just like roam around. And so that's kind of cool. So the idea is like, say someone jumps on your back, you can jump out of your Titan, like shoot them off the back, and then you can like, now you can just run around normal, and your Titan will just run around and kill guys and stuff. So
that's sweet.
Is it good AI when you get the Titan, or is it kind of dumb?
It's definitely different, but so far it's been pretty good. Like I've been like, oh, I just crushed this Titan, and then I was like, yeah, it was AI. So like I didn't even notice that it was like you know, they like block and everything, they like do all this stuff. I mean, they're definitely not as smart. In some ways, they might be better than people in beta because they actually like turn around when you shoot them and stuff. Like so, like I was like shooting this one in the back, and like, oh, this guy's smoked, and then he like turned around. I was like, what? I was like, oh, it's just like his Autobot or whatever. So, yeah, there's that. I think that's. I mean, I didn't notice. Get back to your like the original question. I don't think I noticed that the game was like empty or that 6v6 was too slow. I mean, the maps weren't too big. I mean, they're big enough so that the Titans can, like, walk around and stuff.
Mm.
but they're not so big that you have to really go very far to find a person, basically.
Yeah.
The only, you know,
and obviously when the Titan's walking around, you can hear them. Yeah, you can, so you can just go for that.
Yeah, you can hear them, yeah. You can see them on, like, using the mini-map and stuff, and there's a lot of, like, stuff like that. The only thing I had a problem with, which I think is just, like, some experience, is telling the difference between people, like, in the game is really difficult. Not only, like, on your team, they have little arrows over their head, so you can't get used to that after you play a game or two, but then the other team, like, the grunts and the, like, AI computers look a lot like the normal people. So, you start to get a feel for, like, the way they move and stuff. Like, you can tell right away that it's not, like, an AI because they're, like, weaving or jumping or something. But it takes a little bit to get used to that. I raged a lot about how I didn't know people were there. So... And there's some guns that were, like, overpowered and stuff. So it's like, I mean, it's definitely got some balance issues and stuff. But, like, overall, the game is definitely unique. It's completely different than any other game. Any other first. It's got, like, feels of, like, other first-person shooters, but it's smooth. Like, the Titan battling and stuff is very smooth. I was really skeptical that it was going to be nice, but, you know. Sweet. When you're fighting a Titan and then you jump in a Titan and fight another Titan, it's really just...
Can you hijack the Titan and drive it around?
I don't think so. I think you can. You just jump on its back, you rip this panel off, and you're going to start blasting into it and killing it.
Sweet.
Nice.
I was really impressed by the graphics, and then I found out that it was actually using the Source engine, which was really impressive because the graphics are really good.
Yeah, I didn't know about that.
You know, yeah, it's the same. It's an older engine, but still. For what it has, it's really, really good graphics.
Yeah, it's really nice graphics, and like I said, it's really smooth, and there's a lot of, like, really nice kind of, like, blocking the bullet kind of, you know, it just looks cool. It's really cool.
Yeah.
It's pretty.
Good. That's actually really good to hear, since Titanfall is definitely one of the, like, most anticipated games for either console this year.
Yeah, it's got some. It's cool. It's got some unique features in it. The game's really new kind of style. You can definitely tell that they're trying to change up some things, and we'll see how it works out.
Make a mech game that doesn't lose its edge.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it just depends on how deep the content in the game is. From what I saw, I think that's where it'll decide how far the game goes. So that's about excellent. It.
Excellent. Why don't we do a few listener? We have only two listener questions this week, and so why don't we do the listener questions first? Let's go out of order.
All right.
And
this is unprecedented.
So Nathan Dugas, potentially. I did.
Dugas.
Dugas.
I'm just kidding. I don't know. I just want to, like, pronounce.
Dugas. Dugas.
Dugas.
Sorry about that. I think he's actually one of the hosts from another podcast, cool. Frozen Gamers podcast from Alaska.
Yeah.
But he writes in and he says, "How long do you think a new game should be played before deciding it isn't worth your time?" And
this is a very good question.
That is a really good question. And, you know, and I have a hard time. I think I have a problem myself because a lot of the time when I start a game, I can't not finish it, no matter how terrible it is. But if you're someone who can actually stop playing a game, I think in 2 hours you can definitely tell.
Yeah.
Whether or not you're.
It depends. Depends on what's making you want to stop playing the game. If it's story content, then like 2 hours. If it's just the mechanics, it's going to be like 10 minutes. Because if the mechanics aren't there, I'm going to pick it up, play it for a little while, and be like, I am falling through the world.
I think that, yeah, there's a lot of variables. Because I know, like, when we were younger and we bought a game and, you know, we would have, like, spent all our, like, allowance to buy this game. And back then, like, all of our game purchases were based entirely on box art, you know,
right.
Like, yeah. Like, we saw, had, like, demos that we could play. It was just like, alright, this game looks really cool, and we played it and be like, fucking horrible. We'd be like, whatever, dude, I paid the money for this, I'm gonna beat the shit out of this game. And we just play the hell out of it. But now, you know, now we're like spoiled, so we, you know, we can download demos, you can watch videos of the game, so you kind of have a lot more information going into it.
Reviews online, like free. Yeah. And
let other people suffer before I suffer.
Right.
And, but, and getting yeah. games like on sale and in mass bulk now, like things like Humble Bundles and stuff, yep, make me yeah. even worse because I'm just like, I feel like no obligation. Like that. Like I was the same as Nick. Like, you know, you buy a game, and it's like you put that money in, you put that time, and it's like I have to beat this. Like I have to justify this. And now I'm just like, this game's like okay. Like I played games that I know are good, like Fez. Like I played that game for like an hour and a half, and then I stopped playing. Like I know it's a good game. Like I heard it's good. I even like enjoyed when I played it. But then I'm just like, you know, this isn't going fast enough. Like it's not, like these things aren't exploding. I'm not like upgrading. I'm not like I don't know. It's like I need to be like. I need to be, like, coddled now into, like, all my games.
Yeah. It's like the, it's almost like the YouTubeification of video games, where if it doesn't grab you in the first, if it yeah. doesn't start loading and grab you in the first couple seconds, then it's not, you're not going to be engaged enough to continue playing.
I'm trying to think of the last game that I legitimately felt like right at the beginning, I was like, oh, I don't think I can play this game. there's definitely been a few, like PlayStation Plus games where it was like I got them for free and I didn't play them. I think I played this is going to pain a lot of people because this game has gotten a lot of like good reviews and whatnot and people love it, but the Deus Ex game I could not get into.
Like the newer one?
I think so. I think it's Human Revolution or something.
That was the new one, right?
Yeah.
That took me a little while to get into, but once I did, I was good. You're right, it is very slow.
I played it for like 15 minutes and I stopped. I just didn't like the mechanics, and I think you're exactly right with that, Charles. It's just like I didn't like the way that I was controlling the character. But
I love the original Deus Ex and the second one, and I just refuse to play the new one just on principle because those ones are such good games. I don't think the new one could ever live up to their legacy.
Yeah, and I think Assassin's Creed 3 was also one of the ones that I wanted to stop playing, but I knew that I had paid $60 for it, so I was like, fuck. Like I got.
Yeah, that's actually one where I played like 3/4 of the way through, and then was just like, you know what? I got better things to do.
I think that's actually a better question. Like, how often do you play games that you bought that you feel like you have to finish it, even though you don't want to?
Mm-hmm.
Just because you had paid for it.
Yeah.
I feel like that happens more frequently.
I don't know, man. I played 0 minutes of single player on Call of Duty Ghosts, so pretty much just of that. If that game didn't make me want to like try something to justify paying $60, I think I'm pretty much like, giving up all hope when it comes to that now.
Yeah.
I think if you look at like cost to hours played ratio, for me it's like the cheapest games I've bought produce like a better ratio in terms of hours I've spent playing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I agree with you. That's the thing too, is you just have no obligation when you like pay a little or nothing for a game.
Yeah. I think that obligate that like feeling like I invested 60 or you know what used to be $50 but it's now $60 that you have to spend on every game. It really feels like an investment, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, although I did play Last of Us and I borrowed that from Chubbs. And I grinded through that, like, in a day. So that's, like, a testament to how good that game was.
Yeah, that game was ridiculous. That was definitely one of those games where I was, like, I didn't want to stop playing because I wanted to be... It's like if you rented a movie and you paused it halfway through.
Yeah.
And it's like, son of a bitch. Like, oh, like, I need to, like, refresh my memory on exactly what happened because there's just, like, so much content to the story and,
yep.
and whatnot. And then, like, I don't know, and now I'm playing, like, Assassin's Creed 4, and I feel like the story in that is really good, but it's so spread out because I'm doing so many side missions that I just have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, that always happens to me with those kind of sandbox games. It's like I lose track of what you're even supposed to be doing. Like, it happened to me in Happened to me in Fallout 3. Happened to me in Skyrim. I mean, it happens to me every time. It's like, I don't know what their main sideline is.
I'm like an OCD box opener. I gotta open all the crates, all the boxes, see everything that's in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there just might be, like, I can remember playing, like, Baldur's Gate 2, like, in the original, like, and then finding, like, a crazy sword in a box, and, like, that thing has, like, permanently altered my state of mind when I play any game. Like, I need to look in every box, because there might be something awesome in one of these.
Yeah, and I think, honestly, that stems back from our days of playing NES and, like, Super Mario Brothers, and it's like, I have to hit that question mark box, because there might be a fire flower there. Like, I might be able to get that. And now it's just like, now I just need to find out exactly what's in it. And you're exactly right. We've been, like, programmed. So anyways, we,
which could be a good thing or a bad thing.
Right. We,
don't leave no stone unturned.
Well, I mean, now I open all my drawers every day and open all my cabinets. It might be something someone put in there overnight.
Yeah, I mean, I go to my neighbor's houses and I open their mail because I'm just, like, so interested in...
No couch cushion is left down when you're looking for a change around here.
Every day I go pick up my pillow and say, where the hell is the tooth fairy?
Charles's got a pile of all his baby teeth on his pillow.
No, Charles is just over there ripping out teeth with a plier, like...
My teeth? No.
He's got a pile of somebody else's teeth under his pillow.
So our second listener question this week comes from @GBLoftus, and he said, what was the last game you let compromise your sleep schedule?
I don't every, need to answer this.
Every game?
It's like...
it's irrelevant.
See episodes like... The last 22 episodes, what you've been playing, and insert there, basically.
I'm gonna go out there and say probably Outlast, only because I attempted to only play it after 10 p.m. and that was like I forcibly, you know, made myself do it that way. But most games I play any time of the day into the night, so. I don't think there's any specific one there.
I typically play games before I go to bed, so it usually messes with my it's a bad habit.
That is.
And also like Dota is bad in that, like, if I play a game.
Yeah, Dota is really the one that does it for me, because you can't leave a game that you started.
Yeah. You can't leave a game that you started and none of them last, like, under 40 minutes. So I'm like, I just want to play one more, and it's like one. And I'm like, I get done, it's like 2:10. I'm like, oh my god, like, why did I start playing this game?
Yeah, I think for me it's mainly like the worst offenders, like MMOs, especially right around when they release, because it's just like so much like new game excitement. You just sit and you want to grind all night long, and you know, as soon as one of your friends gets ahead of you, it's like, fuck, I need to work harder at this. I'm slacking.
That's really true. I think MMOs are the games where I can, like, legitimize, like, some reason in my mind, I can, like, justify myself staying up to, like, 6 in the morning.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, it's like, I gotta do it. It's like pulling an all-nighter. It's like, just, I have to, like, get, like, 10 levels.
This doesn't have to do with my sleep schedule, but, I had yesterday off because it was President's Day, and in the banking industry, we just get all federal holidays off. So, I spent from let's see, 11 a.m. until 6:30 p.m. sitting on the couch, not moving, and playing Assassin's Creed 4. And
it's a good day.
I got off my. I stood up and I was like, "Oh my god, what have I done with my life right now?" So bad.
What have I done?
But,
I've definitely had those days where I get up and I'm like, oh, I'm going to be so productive. And I sit at the computer and then I just start playing a game. And the next thing you know, it's like 7:30 at night and you're like, well,
there's, shit. There's an entire day. Oh, well.
Yeah. Anyway,
this is the diary of a gaming addict.
Exactly. And as gaming addicts, we like...
If your laundry starts to pile up around you.
As gaming addicts, we like to talk about our thoughts on things that might happen in the future. So our segment, our weekly segment this week is what do we think the future of consoles will be? That's the question.
Whatever it wants to be.
What are you, a kindergarten teacher?
We're very encouraging. No, I should really try to go to PSU.
I think they'll be like a... My prediction is that it will become like a single console, you know? Maybe not PC, but there's going to be like a one console that they all converge into, and then it'll just be like different app stores on that one console. So it'll be like Microsoft, Sony,
yeah,
whoever.
Kind of like the Steam boxes. Sort
yeah,
of,
kinda.
That has different people making them, and
yeah, because I feel like from a developer's perspective, they don't want to have to deal with all these other different companies. They just want to, you know, it would speed up development significantly if you didn't have to port it, if you didn't have to design it with DirectX for Xbox and then OpenGL for PlayStation. If you could just have one framework that you worked on, it would make developers would just shit their pants in joy because it would make their job so much easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Probably make games a lot nicer and better too, because yeah, they could stop wasting their time like trying to cater to like multiple consoles and platforms.
Right, and there's never, you know, there would never be a lesser console that, like, there's not one console that is slightly worse in some aspect than the other one.
Yeah,
I think there would be. You know, for people who would fear there not being, like, competition, I think there'd still be competition for, like components. So it'd be basically like the PC market, but like, more mainstream.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like old-school PC gaming was when, you know, when you had, like, Matrox cards and I don't even remember what else there was. Like, old-school video cards.
Yeah. And I think that if like... they ever start making games cross-compatible, especially in multiplayer, like, that'll be, like, the start of
yeah,
something like that happening. So,
oh, God, that'd be so nice.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, I don't know, like, I mean, if you could play, like, Call of Duty against someone on Xbox when you're on PlayStation, then it's just like, ah, my controller is better than yours, my hardware is better than yours, whatever, but, like, we're playing the same game. And if you don't like it, then go buy a PlayStation.
Right.
So... and that's the way it will start, I think, and that's the way it should be, I think. So then you just buy a console that you prefer, and maybe have, like, the the OS or whatever, like, it's kind of like a little different or like whatever.
I mean, really, as the developer of the yeah, game, you think that they'd want that anyway, because then the population of the players would be so much larger, and they have more
yeah,
people that get for those microtransactions and that kind of thing, where they make the money.
As a game developer, that's definitely what you want, but I think that's a
console.
That's a,
you don't.
Yeah, right. You want something that you're gonna cause like a group of people, because for the most part, when you buy a console, it's a lot of it is dependent upon what all your friends are getting too. Because
yeah,
you're not gonna buy the opposite of what your friends are getting. You're gonna, you know, go in as a group and play games together. So it's kind of like a mob mentality to it. And if I think that's a lot of the reason they don't do that, because they want people to stick with their product.
Absolutely. And they get they get like portions of like the games that are specific to their like consoles, and they want to keep like people like they want to keep people basically like stuck on their console, so that like if there's a game like Assassin's Creed that comes out on PlayStation only, or you know, one of these games that comes out on PlayStation only, like Halo is only Xbox, then people have to go out and buy the Xbox. They can't go out and buy the PlayStation and play Halo on it.
I know.
It just wouldn't like. I mean, that's where they get their money, is having like unique titles like that.
But I mean, like, what I don't understand is what, like, I know there are plenty of, you know, Xbox fans who would want to pay to play like Uncharted on Xbox or Halo on PlayStation or whatever. So it's like, wouldn't those companies
still make the money?
They would make a lot more money.
because they're it's not like they're making a ton of money off of each console, especially now. Yeah. But if they could get more software sales,
talk about eating into the other competitors' market share, eliminates it.
Mm-hmm. I think some of it too is like there's kind of like competing games in different like sockets. They're not slots. Like you have Halo on the 360, and then you have I can't even think of the name of it for PlayStation. They're kind of like
Resistance. Yeah,
Resistance. They're like competing, kind of in that same slot as like sci-fi shooters.
Right.
And I think if people had the choice between the two on either console, they're gonna gravitate towards one or the other. So I think that they don't really care. I don't think there's any desire on the console designers' parts. I mean, they probably make equal amounts of money on either side, but it's all about locking people in. And I think that, with the way things are going, people kind of see that, and they don't want that, There's definitely, with things like the Wii, or I don't even know how you pronounce it, the little Android console.
Ooh, yeah.
There's definitely like a push for more open console design.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the consoles now, and now more than ever, I could see that cross compatibility happening next generation because, Xbox One and PlayStation 4 both use Blu-ray as their media, and their architecture is very similar. So the way that they're developing the consoles are a lot more similar now than they ever have been in the past, because Xbox 360 had HD DVD, while PS3 had Blu-ray. And before that, you think back farther, PlayStation 1 had a disc and N64 had a cartridge. So there was absolutely no cross-compatibility there, ever. Developing for it was so different. But, looking
Convergence. At... Convergence. Maybe a console will be the first AI.
Yeah, Scarlett Johansson will live in your console and... You'll fall in love with her.
Yeah.
Play with me.
Well, next-gen consoles are all going to be made by Cyberdyne.
Yep. All right.
I look at the consoles now, too, and I almost feel like they're testing the waters, sort of, for how they want this console generation to be, but it's most likely going to be for next-gen consoles. And the Xbox already, Microsoft already wanted, I think, Xbox One to be all digital. And this generation, it just didn't make sense. So
I think, absolutely, next generation will be all digital.
Oh, absolutely. And in some form or another, I think it will be. And, I don't know, I don't know if it's going to be just massive, memory boxes or whatever, and then you download every single game, but
yeah, well, it will storage is cheap now. You'll have a set amount of storage, and once you buy a game, it'll just be like Steam. Like I think the real question is what people were really resistant to the idea of digital download on consoles, just because of the whole resale aspect, which has kind of been baked into consoles for so many years. But it's kind of something that PC gaming just kind of accepted as fate. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why that is, but for on Steam, no one really cares.
Because nobody's gonna buy your games on the PC.
But for years there was like a PC resale thing. You could take your discs back and sell them at like a a video game store, and that kind of died out with Steam. And I think
it died out with consoles when consoles came along and all the developers were making it for consoles, and then it's kind of like, well, why would you want discs? And then it seems like, oh, you don't need discs. And
it was partly a convenience thing, but I think that what Microsoft really wants to know is why is the console community so resistant to that change?
Yeah. I mean, but the thing is, you should be able to do that with digital media. You just have to figure it out. I mean, if I can sell my items on Dota, I should be able to sell my, like,
right,
games on Steam. It's the same thing.
And honestly, like, they would be, they'd be making still pretty good money if you could, you know, sell it to someone
else.
Yeah,
it's not even though...
The digital rights
to
the
game. It's not even as though you need cash either. I mean, if you could just have it put back in your account and then you go buy a different game with it, it's just...
Yeah, exactly. But the thing is, like, it's just twofold to it. I think one is just, like, a security slash just hassle because, you know, you have people that just hack your Steam account, sell all your games, then transfer all the money, like, however they want to figure that out. Sell a game to themselves for, like, $1 billion. So, like, there's that, and then I think the other thing is, although it's probably not a big deal, it's probably a money thing, right? Because, I mean, then when you don't have a reseller market, then you have to buy the game yourself. It's just that simple. If I, like, instead of going on the Steam Marketplace and buying, like, Borderlands 2 for, like, $8, and it doesn't even matter if it's used because, well, it's just a game that I can start over, I have to go on the Steam Marketplace and buy it for $29.99. So it's just, like...
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I see it, but I think at some point, like, as, like, things get more digital, like that's the way they're going to have to cater. To say, like, listen, it's okay, it's not that big of a deal, you can resell these things, just like you can resell, like, the disc.
And if they, I think if they come up with the calculation that if you buy a game, you play it, and then you resell it, like, you can resell it for a certain percentage of, like, the MSRP value or something, and you know that they could calculate it out, so they would know that they'd be making money from it, no matter what.
Another thing they could do, and what the other thing they could do is what they do with, like, most Steam Marketplace transactions is they take a percentage. So you sell it for $30 and they take, like, $4 or something. So it's just...
Yeah.
I think ultimately there'll be a shift. I think it, you know, in terms of buying games... I think we're going to see a bigger shift towards things like kind of like Humble Bundle, but also more like Kickstarter, where rather than paying like money for a game, you'll help invest in it. Kind of, it'll be kind of like more of a donation thing. And maybe this might be like too far in the future, but, you know, like games in general, there's no way to, anything digital, there's no way to differentiate between used and new. So I don't know that there'll be as much of a resale market for like use digital games. I don't know if that will ever even happen, but I think that the notion of kind of like a collective effort to produce a game is something that will become popular, and it already is huge. You know, the whole Kickstarter realm and like Steam Greenlight, all these things that allow developers to kind of you know, make their games reality, is something that's going to really catch on. I think it might produce a whole nother realm of possibilities for games, whole nother like funding source.
Yeah, and I think we're even seeing that a little bit more now with like the whole indie game scene too. You know, I think it started with indie games, you know, where people started studios and whatnot, but now it's kind of going on to Kickstarter, where it's like it could be one or two people. They don't even have a studio. They just want to make this game because it's absolutely what they love. And then, you know, the people back them because they, you know, they make their case, and it's like, then that game is reaching a niche of people.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, it was just the other day that today I learned on Reddit that I noticed about Minecraft has actually jumped to like the number three. It was either number three or number four best selling video game of all time.
That's insane. Which is just like,
I know, it's insane. I forget how many it was. I think it was like 14 or something million units sold. That's just like absolute insanity. But I think the bigger thing to take out of that is that it kind of legitimizes the whole indie developer world. You know, the idea that you can take a game that may not necessarily be finished, a game that you want to complete, but you need people to help you finish it, and go on to become the third most best-selling game of all time. That is just like, there's no better underdog success story than that.
Yeah, that
and
is...
It really makes, you know, it makes the big guys like EA and Activision look like idiots.
Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, there's That game goes against, like, everything. Everything is blocky. It's like the earliest N64 graphics.
It looks like visual diarrhea. It is not a pretty game.
But I think that just the concept of being able to do whatever you want, and, like, there is, like, a subtle understory to it. It's, like...
Yeah,
it's mind-boggling to me, though, because it's like somebody took Counter-Strike, and then they made it stick figures, and they implemented, like, some new mechanic, and then everyone just loved it. It's like, I mean, the game has so much potential to be, like, amazing, because it's so unique, but, like, it's just so, like, I don't know, Minecraft hater.
Yeah, I think it tapped into like a different, like a, it's almost like the Legos of the digital generation, like maybe a generation behind us.
Yeah,
you know, it's a creative tool that they had access to.
Yeah, dude, my brother plays it. He's 13. He plays it nonstop. He's like insane. He PvP's on it and everything. It's like crazy.
I'm waiting for it to come out on. It hasn't been released on PlayStation 4 or PlayStation Vita yet, but it's going to at some point this year. And I'm excited for the PlayStation Vita version because I think that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Handheld Minecraft, and hopefully it's like the full game and not the mobile game that they came out with a couple years ago.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Mobile game is horrible.
I always download it thinking it's going to be awesome. And yeah. Just so disappointed.
Sorely disappointed. So do you guys have anything else? Do you guys have anything else for future consoles, or do we want to talk about the directions that we don't want consoles to take? I think we'll do that.
It's the not top. Five.
The top five directions we don't want consoles to take. Charles, why don't you take number one?
All right. So we talked about this thing before, and it's pretty self-explanatory. Is microtransactions as a standard in console video games would just be terrible. Like, free-to-play, microtransactions are just the standard for all games, and you have to pay for every little thing as part of the games. So like, you have to... It's like, oh, you want to buy your house? Okay, it's going to be $1.50. Oh, okay, shit. I don't want to play this game.
I think we might be too late for this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this may have already happened.
I think for it to be for me to actually get interested in it, then the free to play model will just have to change. I don't know how, and I don't know what I would do. But
my ultimate fear, though, is that like consoles are just like no games anymore. None of them cost any money. You just get a console and you just download all the games you want. But every single game, if you want to get something, you gotta pay for it.
Oh,
so you like God. You get go to play Halo. Cool. You want a Warthog? Cost $2. It's like, what the hell? Like, that's like my ultimate nightmare. Like, I'm just my God. Like, everything is like this. So then you just go in and there's just trolls with tons of money who just spend all their shit and have all this cool looking stuff. And you're like, God.
Yeah, then there would be like, then video games would turn into like class systems. And you'd have like these really rich people with all this like golden garbage where they're sitting on a throne and you're sitting in like this grass hut with like, this little pew-pew gun. And
I think part of that, too, is, like, the only time you really see, like, crazy microtransactions are primarily in, like more casual-type games, like fucking Candy Crush Saga and all that, all those type games. But, you know, the more competitive games, like, because I think the whole point is that the game needs to be skill over like buying power, you know, like if you can buy your way to victory, then no one wants to play it. But for truly competitive games, like if you had microtransactions in Call of Duty for individual weapons, no one would play it. It would not be like an e-sport game. And I think that's what drives a lot of people away from it.
True, but they do this in a lot of like first person shooters now. Like, I mean, this is what Tribes was. And like this new game Loadout, which is on Steam, is sort of like that. And I mean, League of Legends is like that. Well, to an extent, I think like certain characters you have to unlock.
You get so you can either buy in League of Legends, you can rotate the. It automatically rotates the cast of heroes you can use, but the other, if you want to use them all, you have to pay.
Sure. Well, you don't have to pay, but you have to unlock them, so whether or not you grind out like these coins or pay for them, I think, is... Anyways,
Yeah, I think that's another key element to it also, is the ability to, like, grind your way there versus pay for it, you know?
Right.
Yep.
If you want to like scale to get to it, that to me makes a little more legitimate.
And the scalability of that grind, because I've played some free to play games where it's like, oh, you can play for an hour and you earn one penny. It's like, oh, okay,
Number two.
Are you going to the mall later? I'm asking.
Did you put this one down, Charles?
It was in the same vein as some of the other ones we talked about. Is if the consoles became more centered around like being a home system as opposed to a game console. So instead of like focusing on the hardware that will make the graphics look good and the game work well, it all comes down to like Netflix and Hulu and YouTube and all that, the other kind of nonsense peripherals that
you like clothes that have sensors in them that when you wear they make your character move.
Well, doesn't the Xbox One do that to an extent, because they reduce like their processing power so that they could have the Kinect?
Yes.
And whatnot.
So just take it to the next level. It's like, how much of this is really needed at all? Like, is this just to satisfy like a family-friendly console? Is that even needed? Does anyone want a family-friendly console?
Yeah,
families, me.
Yeah, I think there's kind of like an older generation of people that grew up on gaming that can kind of like justify getting one just based on that. Like, you know, my Xbox has basically been a Netflix machine for like the past year or two. You know, that's all it's done. I haven't played any games on there. And I think that some people, you know, maybe it's a bargaining tool and justifying paying that much money for a console. You can say, well, at least we can watch Netflix on it. And maybe not now as much today when you know, basically every new TV can play Netflix anyway. But
right.
You know, I think having those features is cool, but it shouldn't be like the only thing. It shouldn't be like what makes you buy a console. You know, it should always be revolved around games and you know, having the power to play those games.
I think once they realize that with a console, you can like so easily implement these things that like a PC would give you, especially with like the accessibility of like streaming and stuff. They're just like, oh, you know, like we can just add this onto a console, and now like we can totally like hit a new market. And you know, like I can see where like that would come, but I think unless like that side of it becomes something that's super intensive, I don't see like how it would dominate a console. Like, I mean, streaming. Yeah. What is there beyond like, you know, streaming or like movies or like cable? Like what is a family want? Like, as like, you know, what do our parents want out of a console other than just watching movies on Netflix?
Solitaire.
Solitaire. They want Candy Crush Saga.
I think the most telling thing is that it's still, you know, gamers buying consoles saying, oh, I can stream on here too. You don't see like people saying, oh, I want a streaming box. Oh, I can play games on this too. You know?
But you can see, like, I mean, you can definitely see the appeal of a family, though, saying, like, oh, you know, this little kid, like, our kid wants an Xbox One, and we're like, oh, but we can also watch Netflix and stream stuff, and that might actually change, though, because you make a good point, because, like, now they're coming out with, like, Roku boxes and things that will just do this for one-tenth the price.
Right.
So, you know, and smart TVs, actually, so, you know, maybe that's not even going to necessarily even be an issue. The TV just does it automatically. You just plug in the Ethernet to the TV or wireless anyways, you know.
Exactly.
Just as long as it doesn't become all that they can do.
So number three.
We talked about this a lot.
We did talk about this a lot. So I don't know that we have to really go into it too much, but number three is having everything all digital, because it could be a good or a bad thing. And I think the good thing would be you'd have your library of games all in one place and, you know, downloaded and whatnot, you know, just for accessibility and ease of use and whatnot. But then the inability to resell digital games, at least in its current state, would be bad.
Yeah.
A bad thing, but I think we can probably stick to that.
I mean, yeah. We pretty much beat that one down.
Yeah.
But I can definitely, I agree with that. That's like a really good point. We'll have to see.
It all depends on how they do it.
Yeah.
For sure.
Just on some of the suggestions we've thrown out, I'm hopeful, but who knows?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Number four is, like, game consoles that are strictly motion controls or virtual reality or some other sort of gimmicky control mechanism.
Yeah. I mean, you never know where input devices are going to go in the future. So, I mean, we might get to that point at some, you know, at some juncture, but definitely not next gen.
No. I don't want it to be ever, because I just really like my controller.
Yeah.
I just really like having that. I don't know. I think maybe because we always go back to it, but maybe it's because, you know, we grew up on controllers and, like, evolving controllers, but I just don't want... I don't want things where I have to move around a lot and be involved in the gameplay.
Speaking of this kind of goes back to our other topic of just futures of games in general, but how do you feel about consoles or video games which use your, like, mind to control them? Have you ever seen these things?
Yes.
That's what it's going to be. Just plug it in like the Matrix. Boom. You won't even have to move at all. You just sit on your ass. Sit back.
That's like even lazier than I am now.
Just get a feeding tube and you're good to go. You don't even have to move.
One of those, like, really long straws.
Strap an Oculus Rift and lie in your bed. Be great.
Yeah.
Mind control.
We'll have to do another segment on that sometime, because I've seen a lot of videos. It's pretty cool shit.
All right.
Yeah.
Future episode.
The best one is the game that somebody else made the guy do something in. That was crazy.
Yeah, that was crazy.
It's a game where, like, you saw something, and then you made somebody else shoot something because you saw it.
That's crazy.
But, yeah. Like, you were controlling someone else's arm.
Yeah.
You're hacking him?
Basically. So that means, like, literally you could, like, when you're playing a game against someone online, they're pissing you off, you can make them slap.
So basically what you're telling me is the Flat Gamer, the movie with Gerard Butler, is actually real.
Yes.
That movie was so good. I went to see that with Dana's dad in the theater. Oh, it's so good. Anyway. Number five. Does someone want to take number five?
Yeah. You want this, Tim? I don't even know.
Okay. All games for console are on a phone-based OS.
God.
I don't know what this means.
God, no. This one thing comes to mind when I hear this. Windows 8. Oh, my God. No, please. So this is like where the console has an OS that is, like, catered to a phone. So just stupid, dumb. It, like, doesn't, like, work right with controllers and stuff. It's just made because, like, 99.99% of the public has a cell phone, and that's, like, the easiest way to, like, cater to, like, the game. I mean, it could be cool. I'm not saying it's, like, a terrible idea, but from recent, like, tries with phone-based OSs and anything but phones is just miserable.
Yeah.
I could see this being a huge problem.
Yeah. I think, you know, there's kind of like a push for like touch-based games.
Yeah.
And, you know, not every device kind of supports that.
Yeah.
It's kind of like...
Yeah, we were talking about it. And I think Charles and I were talking about it earlier, and it was just like... All we could think of was just a bunch of
games. And it's just like, what is it?
It's like, it's you want to boot that game? You have to go up and push the TV.
And then you have to stand like 2 feet away and touch it. Yeah.
It's like Fruit Ninja at Dave & Buster's. It's just a giant iPad, essentially. Yeah. Like, who the gives... You fucking came to Dave & Buster's to play an iPad game.
Yeah.
And win tickets for it.
You're putting a dollar in to play it, too. Like, what?
Like, the game costs, like, $4.99 on the App Store. Just buy it and you play it.
But you can't get candy for the tickets. Come on, now.
That is true.
Go across the street and buy a bag of Reese's for like $2.
Yeah, it'd be cheaper.
I don't know. I went to one of those places and I didn't play that game, but I played Raptor Attack and I wound up walking away with 1,000 tickets in 15 minutes. It's happened to me 3 times. That machine's broke.
I'm gonna buy all these games for my kids, and then I'm just gonna buy a roll of tickets, and every time they get like so much score, I'm like, here's 5 tickets. And at the end, I'm just gonna make a little shop. It's like, here you go, what do you want? Just buy it off Amazon, ship it. Prime.
You know what I always wondered about, like, the ticket things? Like, wasn't it a little ridiculous that when they got to the point where they had to, like, weigh the tickets to, like, know how many tickets you had?
Yeah.
Like, do they really need this kind of system? Can't they just, like, do something? Isn't there, like, a better system we can have than tickets?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They also give you, like, coins at some point, too. Like,
oh, God.
Well, the
Fun World in New Hampshire, I have like 500 million coins in my basement. They're like so ridiculous.
Yeah.
They were definitely worth more than what they were, like, in weight and material and, like, in general.
Yep. Terrible.
That was a terrible idea.
And it's not like... So you get 10,000 tickets and you get something that's worth, like... So you spend, like, $1,000... to get something that's worth like maybe $50.
That's what I'm saying. I came out pretty even when I went to the arcade. I put in $20, played some games, and then came out with like $22 worth of candy.
You got
$22 worth of candy. It's like 6 pounds.
Like, you know those ads you see that, like this housewife found one crazy chocolate when you're, like, 10,000 tickets. It's just Charles on the other end, like, gonna play Raptor Attack and you'll get 10,000 tickets and you get whatever you want.
I feel like Charles is on, like, a Dave & Buster's commercial of, like Quibbits. Like, I went in with $20, I came out with $22 in candy. And it just, like, shows Charles and he's, like, sitting on a pile of candy, like, hey!
True story. It's actually not Dave & Buster's. It's just like that one in Hooksett.
No. Well, what's in Hooksett?
I don't remember. Let me look it up.
Okay. You're going to get like sponsorship from them after you call them out.
Oh,
yeah.
It's called the Space Surfer. Free t-shirt. Tag.
Oh, I've been there.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man,
it's like a big warehouse.
It's right next to the movie theater, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like right across down the street.
Yeah,
I've been there before.
Didn't we go to that movie theater, Tim, and go watch Chain Letter or something?
We went to the other sketchy Manchester theater that had no heat, and the tickets were only like $2 because you were like freezing in the theater, and they couldn't charge you full price.
It was the middle of winter, and we were in there in like jackets, and I was still cold.
Yeah,
it was ridiculous.
I think we saw Chain Letter. Yeah, that was good
with Kane from.
It was horrible,
WWE.
But
yeah, awful.
Good in a horrible way.
Remember that time we went and saw Dead Silence in Concord?
Oh, yeah.
And I forgot my ID, and I was, like, 22, and I couldn't get in. So I had to go with Chubbs into the Bridge to Terabithia. And I made him go in and sit down so we didn't get caught, and he got so angry. And all these, it was full of, like, 10-year-old kids. It was awesome.
Oh, my God. Man,
those
were the days.
It's a weird movie.
Yeah, I had to actually look it up because I couldn't remember. I'm like, that one with the puppet and something.
Yeah.
Alright, well, anyways. We're getting to the end. We've gotten
that
to
was
the
open
end.
For that was the open for. Yeah.
So we're just gonna go quickly into what we've been playing this week. Tim, what have you been playing?
I played the WildStar stress test this weekend again.
So jelly.
And I don't want to sound like a broken record, you know, community rep for this game, but it's awesome. Yeah, I feel like it's like WoW. It has its issues. I think the UI could be improved a little bit. It feels a little clunky, but overall it's super polished. Just feels like a really fun game, and I think if you enjoyed WoW or if you enjoyed any MMO, you'll definitely like it. And it's not like Elder Scrolls where it tries to be something it's not. It's just it knows that it's this goofy game that has crazy characters, and it just really like takes it and runs with it. But
cool
to be excited about.
Awesome.
I'm pretty excited.
Steve, what are you playing?
Dota and Titanfall, and I think there's probably some other games mingled in there, but yeah, those are the major ones. And Titanfall beta ends tomorrow, so I'm kind of upset about that.
Oh, that sucks.
Comes out
and also soon, yeah, yeah, yeah. It comes out in like a week. Yeah.
Oh really? Oh wow.
Yeah, it comes out in March, right?
I think. Yeah, yeah. So maybe like 2 weeks. Yeah.
So
pretty soon.
Yeah.
They may have an open beta, though. So, I don't know. I read somewhere that there was going to be an open beta. So, this may be, like, the end of this beta, and maybe there's going to be, like, an open beta next week or something. Who knows?
Oh, cool.
I thought I read that somewhere, so we'll see.
Nice. Charles, what are you playing?
Well, my computer died last week, so I've been kind of out of service as far as gaming goes, but I'm looking forward to playing some now that it's back up.
He's back!
You didn't play anything on the Wii?
No. My Wii's been sitting dormant for like a good year and a half. Before I got the computer, I was using it to watch Netflix. But even that app was very dysfunctional, so.
Damn, Charles, I've been waiting to play Mario Kart with you online for like a year. You won't accept my game request.
You can request games in that game?
Yeah. Yeah, that was the joke. I don't know.
I've put in, I think, 27 or 28 hours into Assassin's Creed 4 this week, so it's good. I'm enjoying it so far. I mentioned earlier that I'd kind of get lost in the story with any sandbox game, but there isn't a lot to follow, I guess. Well, there's actually... No, it's the exact opposite. There's too much to follow. All right. Granted, it is almost 12:30 a.m. right now. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. The ship battles are ridiculous, and there's your ship is like fully upgradable, and you can upgrade like the hull, the weapons. I think there's like five different weapon categories. There's like side cannons. There's like front chain shots. There's fire barrels you can shoot out the back. And you can like upgrade cargo and the number of like crew you can have. So it's really it's really upgradable, and it's pretty fun. I'm close to getting all of the trophies for the single player part of it anyways right now. But then I have to put in like apparently 40 hours, and I haven't started any of the multiplayer, and I apparently have to put in 40 hours for that. So.
Well,
I'm not looking forward
to
that.
Life.
But, yeah, and I've also heard that the multiplayer is not good, so that'll be a fun 40 hours. But anyways, that brings us to the end of the podcast. I want to thank all of our listeners, including Nathan Dugas.
Dugas
Mitch. at GB Loftus for writing into us this week. And I want to thank Tim, Steve, Charles,
I'm gonna thank myself, and this is the end of Late Night Gamers podcast episode 25. It's 12. It is after midnight, and it's time for all of us to go to bed. So good night, everyone.
Late night gamers.
Late Night Gamers podcast, where we make all of your gaming habits seem acceptable.
Late Night Gamers.
Steve.
Sucks so bad, it's so unbalanced. I just quit and never play it ever again.
Carl.
What do you do in your free time? Sit around knitting?
Screw that shit, I'm gonna cut up a dragon's head.
Damn.
It's okay if your guts spill out and you explode into a bloody mess. As long as you don't take your clothes off.
Yeah, that game came out today, by the way. You can add that to your news if you want, but it doesn't really matter. But that game that came out that Charles was talking about, Banished?
Prey 2?
Banished. Yeah. Prey 2 was secretly released today.
It took zero fanfare.
It had been completed like 2 years ago. They just decided to release it.